All right. I feel pretty confident, unless I drop over up here, we're going to finish this Saul piece that we've been talking about. I just want to hit the last piece, and we're going to start a new lesson on unity. And so we spent a lot of time actually talking about Saul and his conversion, and him coming back to Jerusalem, and how difficult, you know, that must have been for him to do that. And we've been talking about unity and forgiveness and how important it is for us to be willing to forgive. And that if we don't all forgive, you know, having someone like Saul come in and only half the people forgiving him is going to cause a problem. All right, that's going to cause a problem. And so when God expects us to forgive, we need to forgive. And we ended last week looking, what the verse was, but it was the woman who came in with the Pharisee, Luke 7, 36 through 48, where the woman came in and she was washing Jesus' feet with her tears and with high-priced oil. And at the end there, Jesus was telling Simon, he says, you know, I got something to say to you. And Simon said, well, teach on, teacher. And he said, and he went and said, you know, hey, this woman's done all these things for me, even though you think she's a sinner. And she is a sinner. Jesus said, she is a sinner. You're right, she's a sinner. But look at her heart. And look at all that she's doing. And you didn't do any of these things for me. And he said that those who are forgiven much, what? What did Jesus say in that passage? Love much. Right? Those who are forgiven much, love much. And you know, those, you know, in our this did this woman know she was a sinner? I mean, she knew she was a sinner. And she knew that she had done whatever her past had been. She knew that she had done some things that she wasn't proud of, engaged in things that she shouldn't have been. And she was trying to make it right. And Jesus said, your sins are forgiven. So the point of that first piece is that, you know, we have to be careful, because we will become a stumbling block if we, for some reason, hold grudges, or if we don't move forward. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole thing on forgiveness fully now, but people also need to repent, right? I mean, this isn't just anything goes, and anything anyone wants to do, we just overlook it, and it doesn't matter, and that's not what I'm advocating for. But when the time is right and the person is repentant, you know, we need to be unified and come together as a family and forgive. And I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying that sometimes some aren't harder to forgive than others, and certain actions of people may be something that's harder than others, you know, in our minds to forgive. I understand all that. I get it. I'm not saying it's easy. But it's what's expected. So I'm going to pivot now to Acts 15, 36 through 41, because Saul had been forgiven much. Okay, we talked about all of the things that he did. He had been forgiven much. And I believe that Paul loved much. And I believe he loved the Lord. And I believe he loved God. Because no one would go through everything that Paul went through if he didn't love God. I mean, I believe that. I believe he loved God. And so when you look at Acts 15, will someone read just those five verses, 36 through 41, Acts 15, 36 through 41.
And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, Let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord, and see how they do. And Barnabas determined to take with them John, whose surname was Mark. But Paul thought it not good to take him with them, who departed from them from Pamphylia, and went not with them to the work. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed to Cyprus. And Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren unto the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches.
Okay, thank you. So, in verse 36, what did Paul suggest to Barnabas?
Visit the churches.
Let's go back, you know, let's circle through. And if you've ever done mission work, you don't just kind of go and go one time and never go back, right? I mean, unless you can't, you go back and you strengthen the brethren and you encourage them and they like to see you and that means something to them, right? And so he's like, let's go back into every city where we've preached the word of the Lord and see how they're doing. Now, what do you notice of what happens in verse 37?
A difference of opinion.
Okay.
Barnabas decides to take Mark, John Mark.
Okay. And in 37 and 38, what do you notice about each of their dispositions? In verse 37, how did Barnabas feel about that?
Very strong.
He was determined. I'm in the New King James, right? But it says Barnabas was determined. Now, have you ever been determined to do something? Have you ever seen, if you have children, have you ever seen your children determined to do something? Right? It's pretty your mind set, is it not? And in verse 38, how did Paul feel? What words there?
He insisted.
So now you have someone who is determined and someone who is insisting, something different, right? They're not on the same page. And so, and these are two pretty principled men, are they not? And so you've got one that's determined that it goes one way, and you've got another who's insisting that it goes another way. Have you ever seen two strong-willed people in the church who are on opposite sides of something? Probably all of us, probably we may have been one of those people. Whether it's right or wrong, you know, it's...
So there was a little contention here.
I'm sorry?
There was a little contention.
Yes, for sure. There was a contention, for sure. Is it wrong to share your view with someone else when it's conflicting with what they believe?
No.
I would suggest that sometimes we need to do that more often.
It's almost a certain duty that you should speak your mind, but you need to be willing to compromise.
And we are to speak how and what mindset?
We're to do it in love.
In love, right? To bring everyone along. We're to do it in love, not to win an argument, and not to get our own way. I think sometimes, we've talked about this before in other classes, having resentment and having something where if you ever just held on to something because you didn't say anything, you never had the conversation, and so you just hang on to it and hang on to it and hang on to it, and it impacts you and it impacts your relationship, and the other person doesn't even know because you never had the conversation with them. That's why Matthew 18 tells us if you have a problem with a brother, you need to go talk to that brother or sister and have that conversation. So just keeping your mouth closed forever isn't a good thing either. Now, there's sometimes we don't have to talk to them about every single thing. I mean, we have to make decisions. But if it's bothering us, if we feel that strongly to where you might insist or that you're convicted in something, then you should go have that conversation.
Ecclesiastes says there's a time to speak and a time to be silent.
Right. And so there are times to be silent. We don't have to be one of these people that every single thing, you know, why did we get a 5-bladed fan? Who picked a 5-bladed fan? Why don't we have a 7-bladed fan or a 3-bladed fan, right? I mean, okay, I mean, if it's bothering you that much and you can't worship, then you need to go have the conversation. Okay. But, so we do have to use judgment here. So the point isn't just be silent at all costs. But on the flip side, we need to think about this. Remember, I started when we talked about unity, that whenever there's division, there's an absence of what? 1 Corinthians 13.
Love.
Right? Whenever there's real division, somewhere in there, there's an absence of love. Whether it's long-suffering, patience, wanting the best for someone else, you know, there's pride involved, there's something involved. Okay, seeking one's own. Right, when you go back through and look at that list of 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 6. So here you have two strong people. You've got Barnabas and you have Paul, and they're talking about Mark. And why isn't Paul so hot on Mark?
Because he's turned back once before.
Because the guy left him once, right? He was out in the work, and he wasn't reliable in that regard. And so he left. What do you think Paul should have done? Did Paul do the right thing? Because listen, you're going back. You're going back through these cities. And why would you take Mark? I mean, is this, what do you think about that?
Well, obviously Paul was still upset about the fact that Mark had left. Mm-hmm. Even after some time had passed, it still looked like a sore under his saddle.
Yeah. Yeah, when you think back, we looked at the 70 times 7. You know, we look back at some of those verses. And I'm not going to judge Paul if, you know, he should have, shouldn't have. I don't know all the circumstances. But who has forgiven him? Barnabas. Right? The same one that stood up for Paul. Barnabas seems he's quick to forgive. Yeah.
We don't know this, but I mean, Barnabas, personality in the Bible, he was the only man called a good man. I mean, he was called a good man. He was very encouraging even to Paul, and maybe he felt like that he needed the encouragement, John Martin, that he needed it.
That's right.
That was his personality.
To help him move forward, that he can go and be productive again. Right? I mean, maybe Barnabas saw that in some way.
I would say, well, look at what they were able to accomplish with two teams. At least they went and did the work. You know, Barnabas didn't just say, okay, well, if you're not going to go John Mark, then I just won't go. Yeah. I mean, at least they went out. Now they had two teams that could go and visit and, you know, get twice as much encouragement done.
Yeah. Listen, God can make good out of a bad situation. But, you know, if the church divided, you could say, well, look at the good that came out of it, and they went and started something somewhere. It's not typically that way, right? And yes, without question, they got two teams, and I'm sure they got more done. If they had really agreed and said, you know what, and they sat down and they thought about it and they said, listen, I'm uncomfortable. If they had that conversation, really have the conversation and said, I'm just uncomfortable. And they came up with a plan and said, you know what, I'll take Mark, right, and you take Silas. And, you know, that works for both of us, and you know, there's no doctrine violated here, and we could go do that, and we'll get more done, right, that way. I don't think that's how it came across. Look at verse 39, because in verse 39, it wasn't like they came to some great agreement and strategized about this. What do you learn in verse 39? It was so sharp. This is a sad verse for me. I mean, this is Paul and Barnabas.
They were not agreeing at all.
They couldn't see each other's position, right? And it was so sharp that what happened is to say.
They parted.
They separated from each other. I mean, Paul, not temporarily, but Paul risked losing a friend that day. Somebody who stood up for him when other people wouldn't stand up for him. And, you know, the point here, right, it says, but Paul chose Silas. So they departed. It wasn't like they had this plan. They departed. Now they're thinking, am I going to go on my own or I'm going to get someone? Barnabas says, well, you know, I'm going to take Mark. And Paul found Silas. And they went. But they went under bad circumstances. And just two things, you know, on this is that we just really need to be careful that we don't devalue our relationships in the church. There's always going to be people you get along with better than others. There's always going to be people that you click with more than others in the sense that you've just got more in common. But what we all have in common is that we're saved by the blood of Christ. What we all have in common is that we believe in God and that we believe in the gospel. The story of salvation. We believe that Jesus did raise the third day. And that he can wash away our sins. That's what binds us from all walks of life, from all different places, from places all over the world. We can come together as one, unified, under that umbrella. Now within that umbrella, do some of us like sports and some of us could care less if we ever watch sports? Yes. You know, so some of us have nice hair and others of us don't have as nice a hair? Yes. Right? I mean, there's all kinds of and people that are a little more challenging to us, and some people remind us a little more of our brother or our sister or our mom or our dad who we have a, you know. Yeah, it's messy. We're people. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 6.
Well, Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him almost everywhere went. The other apostles, not so much. I mean, they certainly were there, and he loved them just as much, but he had an affinity for those three that was stronger than the others.
Yes. So, you know, and there's the disciple whom Jesus what?
Loved.
Well, did he not love the others? Of course he did. So that's okay. Right, that there's people who we just naturally gravitate towards a little bit. We need to make sure we're not a respecter of persons, as it tells us in James. You know, we need to know that everybody's is valuable. There aren't classes of people, you know, in the church. We're all not worthy. But the point here, when you think about Saul, and you think about Paul, I should say at this point, when you think about Paul here, and you think about his thoughts towards Mark, how do you feel about that?
I think it's real life. I think we'd be, you know, especially given context that they're going to check in and encourage other churches. That's the point of what they're doing. I think it would be naive to think in real life, if we were taking somebody that had walked out before,
we're going to have a discussion before we go, because if we're going to encourage other people, check in on them, we need to make sure we're going to set that example once we get there. And it, you know, so I think it was a reasonable discussion that should have been had, but like you say, it doesn't appear that got discussed, it was just anger and split. But then at the end, and I'm going to go further than the question you just asked, but at the end, I think it's very much real life and poses to their Christianity as well, because it does say they went through confirming the churches. That would have happened if their hearts weren't right. So it almost gives an inference of they disagreed, and they might be fussing with each other, but they kept in mind what they were supposed to be doing.
Oh, yeah, they were focused on
their hearts
on the word.
Where they needed to be for God. Well, they'll fuss about it, figure it out later, but we need to focus on what we're supposed to be doing and kept in mind what was most important.
Yeah.
They were both great men, but they were imperfect.
That's right.
And Christ was the only one that was perfect.
That's right. I mean, they're both great men, they're both imperfect, and I guess the point here in closing this up for me is that there's a lot of great men and women here, and we're all imperfect, right? And it's a reminder to me, because I know how much I've been forgiven. And Paul was forgiven a lot. And yet he had a hard time out of the gate forgiving Mark. He had been forgiven so much. And yet he was having a hard time forgiving Mark for this one thing. And we need to be careful that we don't get kind of on our high horse in a way, and that we're not willing to forgive people when they've repented, right? And when they have the right heart, the right attitude. I know that's hard to get into, well, do they, don't they? But when a brother or sister comes and they say that they're working on something, or they're sorry, and we need to work with them on that, right? And so if it can happen to Paul, it can happen to us, right? Do you have a comment?
I was going to say they must have made up, because, I mean, John Mark's mentioned like 3 or 4 more times in the scriptures, and like in that in chapter 21, he's going on to say, you know, he doesn't even go to Cyprus. Maybe, I don't know, who knows if it was because Mark was there with Barnabas. But then, like, 2 Timothy 4 talks about how he's saying that, Mark is profitable for me. And then Philemon, Mark is a good man. So
that's right.
Obviously, he obviously not only did he repent, but he proved himself to Paul.
That's right. So 2 Timothy 4, 9 through 11 is where Paul requests Mark and says, hey, bring him along. He's useful. And so it got there. And sometimes it gets there, and sometimes it doesn't. We just need to be careful, right, and watch that we're unified in our forgiveness, that we, we forgive when it's the right time to forgive, and that we're not a stumbling block. Okay, we want to be careful that we're not a stumbling block. Okay, I want to move to the next piece, where I want to talk about us being unified in work. Unified in our work. Look with me in Matthew 20. I'll read this. Just a few verses here. Matthew 20. Which parable is this?
Hired laborers.
Okay, hired laborers, workers in the vineyard. So read with me here, Matthew 20. It says, this is Christ speaking. It says, for the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. Now, when he had agreed with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the marketplace. And he said to them, you also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right, I will give you. So they went. And again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did likewise.
And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle and said to them, why have you been standing here idle all day? And they said to him, because no one hired us. He said to them, you also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right, you will receive. So when the evening had come, the owner of the vineyard said to the steward, call the laborers and give them their wages, beginning with the last to the first. And when those came who were hired about the 11th hour, they each received a denarius. But when the first came, they supposed that they would receive more. And they likewise received each a denarius. And when they had received it, they complained against the landowner, saying, these last men worked only 1 hour, and you made them equal to us, who have borne the burden and the heat of the day. But he answered one of them and said, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours and go your way. I wish to give to this last man the same as you. Is it not lawful for me to do with what I wish with my own things? Or is your eye evil because I am good? So the last will be first, and the first last. For many are called, but few chosen. Okay. I'm sure some of you have heard this parable before, right? So let's look at this for a moment. What do the various factors in this parable represent, right? So parables, typically what's going on, they represent something. So the landowner, what is the landowner? Okay. Look at verse 1. I jumped faster. I wanted to go there. So, he says that the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. Now, when you think about, you know, the landowner kind of in this parable, when you think about the landowner, who's kind of the landowner representing if you think about this in the spiritual sense?
Mine calls him Lord.
Yours says Lord? So it's...
King James. It says, verse 8, so when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard saith unto his steward, call the laborers.
Yeah, okay. So... yeah, I mean, he's certainly the... So I believe that the landowner here is kind of representative of God or Christ, right? Right, in the sense that this is how the kingdom, you know, of heaven was going to kind of work. And then who then are the laborers? Okay, so they're like
Christians,
right? People who've been called, and they were willing and responded, right? So they went out, the message, the landowners, went out, there was a calling, and these laborers came to work in the vineyard. And when you think about the vineyard, kind of what might the vineyard be like?
The church.
The church, right? So you've got you have Christians working in the church, or you've got these laborers, they're working in the vineyard for the landowner, for the one. And who owns the church?
Christ.
Christ, right? We know that in Ephesians. right? And so there's some parallels here, okay? Now, so when you think about what happens in this parable, the very first thing is verse 2, he found some laborers, there were some laborers, and what was the deal with them? What deal did he make?
Penny.
Okay, a penny, right, a denarius, whatever your version says. But there's a wage, he gets, you know, a denarius, a penny for the day. So he goes out and he makes this deal and says, hey, I have work for you. Do you want to work? And they want to work. He goes, this is how much? Are you good with that? Yes. And they go in and they work. Now, then what happens?
He goes out at various hours and finds me an idol. And he says, I'll pay you what's right.
Yeah.
Make that deal.
He doesn't make the same deal with them, right? And at this point, they know, and you know, if, for those who've worked in different countries or seen different, you know, the way that labor forces work, men, women, whatever, they gather in a certain area, and people who have work, they come by, they pick them up, and they usually get picked up in the morning. And then that's it. I mean, they've got a day's worth of work for them to do. They're looking for laborers. They pick the laborers, and off they go. Right? And if you're later in the day, you didn't get picked early, you might not work that day. Right? I mean, that's how a lot of countries operate. And there's just like people wander into a certain area, and they're looking for work for the day. And sometimes they can find it, sometimes they can't find it, right? And so there were some others who didn't get picked up. So the landowner goes back out and finds people, and he says, do you want to work? At this point, they're not in a big position to bargain because, you know, it's like, he's like, if you want to work, go, I'll pay you what's fair, all right? And so they go. So he does this at the third hour, verse 3, and he tells him whatever's right, I'll give you, verse 4. And then he does it again in verse 5 at the, which hours? The sixth hour and the ninth hour, he does it. And then at the 11th hour. And so he goes back out at the 11th hour, and he says, why are you standing idle? And what do they tell him?
Nobody hired us.
Nobody hired us, verse 7. I mean, nobody hired us. We've been looking for work. No one will pick us up. And so he tells them the same thing, right? You also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right, you will receive. Okay? So, then it comes time, right, for payment. The day is over. We're now past the 11th hour. We're at the 12th hour. It's time for payment. Oh, by the way, they didn't work the nice 8-hour days, right, that we work here, right, sometimes. So verse 8, so when evening had come, the owner of the vineyard said to his steward, call the laborers and give them their wages, beginning with the last of the first. We'll come back to that. Okay. In verse 9, so who's the last?
The ones who came at the 11th hour.
That's right, the ones who came at the 11th hour, right? So they come, and what did they receive? So, people know that the day's over. People gather around. They're ready for payment. He calls the ones who worked the 11th hour, and they get paid a denarius, right? Now, does anybody see this? I get the impression here by the rest of it, that people know what's going on. They get called, the day's over, they come, they're ready to get paid. You pull the 11th out, they call those people first, and they get paid a denarius. So if you're a person earlier, right, what does verse 10 say? So when the first came, what were they thinking?
I suppose they get more.
I'm going to get more.
Because I did more work.
I mean, look at, they just gave them a denarius. You're thinking,
per hour.
Am I going to get 12?
Yeah.
Yep.
Am I going to get 12? How am I going to get 12? Yeah. And that just, awesome. I can't get 12, but I ought to get 6. Right? And have, you know, I mean, what would I get? So it says, but when the first came, they supposed that they would receive more. And what? They likewise received each the denarius. Right? Why would they really think that they should deserve more?
They did more work.
But did they not agree to a denarius?
Yes.
And they knew that they were, when they were working. I mean, you know, if you came to my house and I said, I'm going to give you a dollar for the day, all right? One, I'd probably see the back of your head running, all right? But, you know, would you be surprised if you got a dollar? Like, what changed? What? Why would they expect more?
Because they saw the person doing less work getting the same amount that you were offered in show. So it's not just a thing that you get more because you did more work.
The human brain wants things to be fair.
Yeah.
Fairness. Right? We're always looking at what's fair. Okay? It's the human condition. It's just like it's back to the $1, $9, $2, $8, $4, $6, okay, and the little exercise.
But it's our view of fairness.
That's right.
That's the problem with fairness. It's always through our own perspective, usually. Because what they got was fair. They agreed to it. They worked under those conditions. That was fair. What he did was fair. But because it didn't meet their expectation, then it's not fair. And we have to be careful with that word fairness.
And if we really think about it for any length of time, we don't want fairness from God. I mean, we'd all be in a world of hurt if that's really what we were looking for. We want grace and mercy. And as you go through the Christian walk, I mean, hopefully we can get to a point where we realize when you start early in your life, it's a privilege, an honor, and a blessing to serve such a gracious and merciful God who is so generous with us versus looking at fairness. Because when you start looking at fairness, we're sunk.
Yeah, I mean, can we not be happy for our brothers and sisters when they do well? You walk along, I found a quarter, we're walking together, and you find a $20 bill. Well, that's not fair. All right? I mean, are you going to give me half of that? I got a quarter. Like, I didn't earn it. I'm just walking. I had to walk here anyway. All right? And I've got a quarter. Right? We look at, was it fair? Did every single person in the first century get healed of their illness? Well, was it fair that Jesus healed some and he didn't heal others? Why did you heal their daughter? Why didn't you heal my son? Paul, Lord, why don't you heal me? You give me the power to heal others. Why don't you heal me? 3 times I'm asking you. My grace is sufficient for you.
What does that read? My grace is sufficient for you.
God doesn't put the same value on all this physical stuff that we do, right? We get caught up on, is everyone's car the same? Is everyone's house the same? Are their clothes the same? You know, is your dog better than my dog? God doesn't care about any of that. What he cares about is our spiritual condition. He doesn't see us first in this body. He sees us as a spirit. He sees us as his child. And he goes, I've given you grace. I've given you salvation. Like, I don't, you know, whatever Paul's infirmity was, some people say maybe his eyesight is whatever. Let's say it was his eyesight. So you don't see that well. Did God fix Moses' tongue so that he could speak perfectly when he went to Pharaoh? Could he have? Look at all of the miracles. Locusts and frogs and earth. I mean, everything that's going on, could he not have helped Moses speak better? Of course he could have. Did he? No. My grace is, if you're focused on the wrong things. Quit focusing on who has 2 TV sets and who has 3 and, you know, this and that. And, you know, if you made this much or you made that much, or who got recognition in the church and who didn't for something. Rejoice that your brother or your sister was recognized.
But somehow, even in family siblings, how many times young children, one gets something and, well, that's not fair.
That's right.
Even as a child.
Well, that is our natural instinct, right? And we have to, as we grow as Christians, right, we have to have a different focus. Right? That's a maturity. My ways are not your ways, the Lord tells us. Right? He focuses on different things. When Christ came here, it says he didn't have a place to what?
Lay his head.
He didn't come here to build all this stuff. But he came to seek and save the lost. Not to distribute wealth. I mean, this country's going to work on, you know, we're all concerned about wealth and who has wealth and who doesn't have wealth and all that. And I'm not saying, listen, I want everyone to do well. Okay? But we're obsessed with it is in the world, and we're obsessed with it as a country. And what I want is I want people to be spiritually well. Right? You can give somebody a meal. Christ says, the poor you're going to have with you always. You can give someone a meal. We should give someone a meal. He says, when you do it to the least of these, you've done it to me. We ought to be gracious and giving. We need to be. But that meal, what does that meal do for somebody? Right? Does it give them peace? Does it give them salvation? All right. So we went off a little bit. We're going to come back. You have a final comment you want to make?
Jesus said, beware of covetousness. A man's life consists not in the things he possesses. If you get that in your heart right, then a lot of these other things take care of themselves.
Yeah. So we'll finish this up next week, but we're going to think about unity in the work that we do, and being unified in our work and not looking across, well, did she get a Daenerys, or did, you know, how come she got 2 and I didn't get any? Right, and us just working together and doing our part. Okay, thank you.